My name is April Hennebury, and my memories of the West Pier in Brighton go back to when I was a child in the 30s. My father, the late A.W. Scholey, was the manager of the pier. It was a lovely place to be in those days. It smelt of wood and sea. My mother was a violinist in the orchestra there, and that's where she met my father, who was, of course, the manager of the pier. Of course, to a child, it was great fun to go around playing all the slot machines. I used to go up into the office and get a great big bag of discs, because nothing cost me anything, and I used to go around playing on the slot machines. Albert Cotelby, who became a well-known composer of things like In a Monastery Garden, was the leader of the orchestra when they had the permanent orchestra playing in the concert hall, and they used to play for dancing. After the permanent orchestra was no more, visiting orchestras used to come. A great favourite of mine was Petra Lengro and his ladies' orchestra, all in gypsy costume. They were very jolly. Rousing sort of performance.
I'm Fred Gray. I'm the honorary, that means unpaid, historian of the Brighton West Pier Trust. My proper job is with Sussex University. And we're standing here on Brighton Beach with the pier over us, really, and it's a combination, I think, of, well, it's partly a sort of ruined wedding cake. It's wonderful, fantastic architecture, but it's rusty, it's falling apart. There are seagulls and pigeons flying around it, so it's a bit of a Steptoe's junkyard as well. Tracing back the history of the pier as it is today is very, very different from how it was in the past. The pier opened in 1866. It was designed by the famous pier architecture, the sort of Isambard Kingdom Brunel of pier design, someone called Eugenius Birch. This pier, when it opened, though, was essentially an open deck structure. It was a select extension of the seafront promenade. People would pay to go on the pier and would walk up and down it, listen to the band playing, but only half a dozen small buildings on the pier. From the 1890s, though, this pier started to change. Fashions in seaside entertainment were changing, and the rather staid pleasures of just walking on the pier and listening to the band were no longer really good enough to attract people onto the pier. And so in the mid-1890s, the West Pier Company built a wonderful, massive end-of-the-pier building, which is still there on the pier. Then in 1916, the West Pier Concert Hall, which is the building in the centre of the pier, was opened up. As the name Concert Hall implies, it was the place where the West Pier Orchestra performed. And that's a wonderful piece of holiday architecture. It's a low, oval-shaped building.
There were also attractions like the speedboat and the paddle steamer. And the bathing station was very, very popular, where you could, for a small fee, bathe off the pier straight into the deep water, which was lovely for swimming. And I believe in the early days, in the early mornings, for men only, nude swimming was allowed. I did hear that. I don't think ladies were ever allowed. Another popular attraction were the divers, two of whom were ladies, and one of them used to ride round the pier on a bicycle with a megaphone saying, "Come and see me dive at 12 o'clock or whatever time it was." I was very impressed with them as a child. I thought it was terribly brave to dive from the landing stages into the well. Very impressive.
There was this wonderful competition between the two piers, trying to get the best entertainers, the best attractions, the best new buildings, the best bands, the latest attractions and so on. And that went on all the way through 1920s, 1930s and indeed after the war.
During the 30s, the West Pier was regarded as more, what's the word I want? Sort of upper class than the Palace Pier, really. The Palace Pier, being situated where it was right in line for all the day trippers. Also, in the very early days, there was quite a strict dress code. You wouldn't have gone on the pier wearing shorts or a man without a tie. I mean, it was all very respectable in those days.
I used to go dancing on the West Pier when I was young. Yes, and it was very, very friendly down there. Very friendly.
Nice atmosphere. Little theatre.
We used to dance on the planks, and I used to wear a pair of shoes out at night, dancing on there. Honestly, that's true. Oh. They were never any good for the next night, so I used to have to go and buy another cheap pair. But I used to dance so much down there on those wooden planks. Now I used to have to be careful what sort of heels I bought in case I got stuck.
And yeah. And the theatre, you take the nice little shows in the theatre. The West Pier was a nice, cosy little place.
Well, I always preferred really the West Pier to the Palace Pier, I did.
The West Pier Theatre was considered the premier theatre in Brighton and rated much higher than the Theatre Royal, and all the very top touring shows used to come and play there. Ellen Terry and Mrs. Patrick Campbell, many, many well-known people. I remember Forbes Robertson being there, and Jean Forbes Robertson, John Gielgud, all of them have played there.
Sometimes they were serious plays, a bit of Ibsen or Shakespeare, for example, but more often they were, I guess you'd call it light, dramatic events. And the most successful play on the West Pier was a play called The Ghost Train, which was written by someone called Arnold Ridley, who in later life became famous as Private Godfrey in Dad's Army.
There was always a Andrew Melville pantomime. He was one of the Melville brothers who produced those lovely pantomimes at the Lyceum with the Crazy Gang. And he always did one for the West Pier. And in between the pantomime and the repertory during the summer, the various touring companies used to come. People like Lydia Kiash and her ballet, and all sorts of touring shows, and also the local amateurs would use that theatre for their performances. So there was always plenty going on. It was a great pity, and I think that was the reason, perhaps, for the decline, in a way, of the fortunes of the pier, that the theatre was at the end of the pier and not at the front of the pier, because you had to walk right the way down the pier, whatever the weather. In the winter, that was not so funny. At the time I remember the theatre, there were holes appearing in the floor, and the stagehands, while they were not doing anything, used to sit and fish through the holes in the floor. The piers, of course, closed when the war started, and after Dunkirk, the front in Brighton was closed, and the piers were considered a possible aid to invasion, which seems a little bit odd looking back on it. And the military proposed destroying both the piers completely. And luckily my father was able to persuade them to simply blow a hole in each, which was duly done, and so each pier had a great big gap, which was able to be restored when the war was over.
But it reopened not as a pleasure pier, but really as a funfair pier. The West Pier Theatre didn't reopen after the war. It was converted into a restaurant upstairs, a restaurant called the Ocean Restaurant, which sold that sort of classic 1950s meal of either a ham salad or fish and chips, cup of tea and bread and butter.
Efforts were made to jolly it up. There were more things like little roundabouts for children, and sideshows of that sort appeared on the scene. But somehow or other, it never really quite took off. They could not make enough money to keep the pier in repair, which was really very sad, and that was how it gradually started to fall apart, and they had to close it.
My name's Rachel Clark, and I'm the general manager of the West Pier Trust. The pier was finally closed in 1975 because it was considered unsafe to the public. And actually, there was a possibility that it could have been demolished. That was met with absolute outrage by the residents of Brighton, and in particular someone called John Lloyd, who led a campaign, started a campaign immediately to stop this order. That involved getting masses of signatures on a petition and organising marches up and down the seafront to protest against possible demolition. They were successful and the pier was saved, but, and that's really how the trust was formed. There were moments in the 80s when it looked as if the restoration was going to be secured, and then it, you know, it all crumbled away. But really, the biggest turnaround for the pier was in the mid-90s with the creation of the National Lottery. And there followed 3 years of negotiation with the Lottery Fund. They clearly wanted to help. The spirit was there, but my goodness, it was a long process. Obviously, there was an awful lot of funding needed. I mean, the total cost of the restoration is something in the region of £30 million. It's a lot of money. It's a big project. You know, people wonder, the members of the public go from, well, patient acceptance to absolute exasperation with us because they can't understand why it's taking so long to achieve the restoration. And the simple answer is that it is very complicated. It involves a lot of money and it's very complicated. And one of the reasons it's so complicated is that it involves so many different interested parties. The West Pier Trust, who own the land, own the pier. There's the council, who owned the land which is being transferred for the new development. There's the lottery fund that are putting in 14.2 million. There's the private sector that's putting in something in the region of 20 million. And of course, there's English Heritage, who are sort of guarding the sort of heritage aspects of the pier and its Grade 1 status, and are absolutely crucial to all of this. I mean, terribly supportive. But, you know, everyone has their own opinion and their own agenda. So it makes every bit of negotiation is very complicated and rather long-winded.
Our best estimate now, I think, is that it's going to be 2002 before serious, substantial work starts on the pier. But I would hope that by 2004, 2005, we could come back and look at a West Pier which was glistening with gleaming white paint and a wonderful silvery roof. Piers are sometimes called people's palaces, and if there is a people's palace in Piers, then it's almost certainly the West Pier, which is the finest people's palace.
The features of the pier that I find exquisitely beautiful, and standing where we are on the beach, looking at the substructure, which is an elaborate mesh of the starlings at dusk in the evening, they gather around the West Pier and they roost, but they perform this magnificent dance. It can only be described as a dance, which is absolutely mesmerising, beautiful. There are thousands upon thousands of these starlings and it draws crowds. Beautiful.
At the end of the day, the pier will have gone through a whole series of lives, from a promenade pier to a pleasure pier to a funfair pier to a derelict pier, but then hopefully to a new heritage pier.
In some ways, I would love to see the pier back in its former state. I mean, not like a museum, obviously. It would have to appeal to people today and would have to be very different. But I'd rather see it either completely gone or completely restored. It's dreadful to see it as it is now. Very, very sad.
That was